Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 310, recorded November 8th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. Just so you know, we are recording this on the day of the election here in the U.S., but we did vote. We didn't skip out on voting to do the podcast. We actually turned in our mail-in ballots early.
Yeah. So, yeah, but that's all we'll say about that. We've done our civic duty or national duty or whatever.
Except for that, everybody send all the good thoughts that you can to this country because it's scary over here right now.
Okay. No, that's good enough. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I'm kind of freaking out
about
it. I know I'm goofy, but in all seriousness, this is a disturbing election for me. And for all
people.
Of you that listen in other countries, I'm really sorry.
Okay.
It wasn't my fault. However it turns out, it wasn't my fault.
All right. Well, who do we have for the podcast today?
We have Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Nick in Redlands, California, and Ray from the Aquarimax contact page, Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Tom in Provo.
Yeah, we also have some news. None of it particularly good this time, I'm afraid.
No, it was a hard week for fish.
Yeah. Well, one thing is that the shell dwellers that I got, when I got them on the shells, there were with the fish, not the shells that I got beforehand, but the fish came with a little bit of cyanobacteria on them, and it started growing in the tank. And cyanobacteria can be a problem. It can be toxic and various things, as many of you no doubt know. So I was battling that with manual removal and various things, and it started getting worse, and so I decided, and it grows really fast, so this happened rather suddenly. I decided to treat it and looked up various treatments and found a treatment with hydrogen peroxide that, you know, I looked up the cautions and looked it up on several sources and tried to figure out dosages and everything, and I figured, okay, this looks like it's probably worth a try. And I was aware that you had to be careful with it, and you had to watch your fish closely, and if they exhibited any signs of stress, you had to do a partial water change and things like that. So I was aware of that, and put the correct dosage in for my tank size, the 20-gallon tank, and kept an eye. You know, I'd come back and check on the fish. They looked fine. In the morning, they seemed to be fine, you know, after doing it. Then I came back in the afternoon, after work, and they were no longer fine. They were showing signs of stress. I immediately did a partial water change, and it wasn't enough. So I lost quite a few of them. And so now the only ones I have left are the two that I had removed from the tank, including like the small one, the permanently dwarfed one, and the a male, and then whatever fry she has, because she has at least one in there. So I've got those, and then I have one male, a young male that seems to have emerged from all the issues, whatever was going on, completely unscathed. It's fine. I don't know why it's doing so well and the others are not doing, you know, I lost the other ones. It was really shocking and painful for me. It's been years since I've lost fish like that. I mean, you lose one or two fish here and there for various reasons, old age, you know, things like that, but it's been a while since I've had a number of fish just die for some reason, you know, that's not related to just old age or different things like that. It was a painful experience to go through, especially since I've been wanting to do this shell dweller tank for a long time. And so I'm going to try again, but I'm going to make sure the cyanobacteria is under control first. But I don't think I'm going to use that treatment. I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was very upsetting.
Then the same week.
In fact, it was the same day.
It was not a happy day.
It was the day that I came home and found the fish not doing well. same day, we were about to go to bed, and I walked by our 37-gallon tank.
The goldfish tank in the living room.
Yeah, and there was a leak. It wasn't a gushing leak, it was just
it's a drip.
Like
drip,
every second
drip.
Or two, there was a little drip coming out the side of
the corner,
the left corner, about maybe 3 or 4 inches from the bottom. And of course, you can't go to bed when the tank's doing that. There was already a small puddle in the corner on the
floor. We were just really glad that Ross found it that night instead of waking up the next morning.
So there's definitely something to be said for checking on your fish frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But we had probably only lost, I don't know, a quart of water by the time we noticed it. Maybe not even that. But luckily, Kelly and our two oldest, who were, I don't know if we got them out of bed or they were just going to bed or whatever, but enlisted their help. And so one of the kids was holding a towel there to catch the water that was dripping down to prevent it from getting more on the floor. I went to go look for siphon tubes and a container to put the fish in.
A big, what do you call it?
A plastic container.
Plastic bucket.
Yeah.
Rubbermaid type
container.
Storage container.
Storage
container, that's the word.
And the one that I found first that was empty was a clear one, which isn't great because they're a little too flexible usually for that kind of thing long term, but it was okay for the short term. So, and it was about a 30-gallon, 35-gallon one, something that held nearly the same amount of water as the tank. So, put that down in front of the tank, siphon some water from the tank into it, probably about 25, 30 gallons,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And then we transferred the fish over, put the filters on the tub, and then drained the rest of the water from the tank with the python. And then we realized that one of the filters was too heavy for the tub, and so I had to take it off because it was causing it to bulge and twist too much. And I was worried it was going to cause a problem
mm-hmm.
overnight. So I took one of them off, and the other one was running. So the one with the bio wheel with the best biological filtration we kept on the tank, and that was running. And then in the morning we went to a couple of pet stores to see what they had. That we don't have any mom and pop pet stores around anymore, we just have the big box stores, to see what they had. There was a dollar per gallon sale, but of course no 37 gallon tanks.
They didn't have the right, yeah.
So Kelly found on a local, what do you call it, a local
classifieds.
Online classifieds site, found a tank. It said 40-gallon tank, and it was a really good price. It came with a stand, it came with a lid, it came with a light, and it sounded great. And so I took my oldest son and drove down there. As soon as we drove up to their house and I looked at their porch and saw the tank on the porch, and I thought, well, that's not a 40-gallon tank, is it?
Nope.
It wasn't. And we had driven through traffic and crazy
took you an hour to get there.
It took more than an hour. It was like an hour and a half to get there.
It was supposed to be 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And stupid road construction.
Yeah, the computer said 50 minutes, but the road construction and the traffic were so bad. It took a lot longer. We took a different route home, which helped. But, you know, when I got there and saw it wasn't a 40-gallon tank, I thought to myself, okay, well, still a good deal. And I don't want to leave empty-handed and not have anything to fix this problem with. So I'm going to take it. So I did. And
so they're in a 29 right now with
yeah,
the goldfish.
29-gallon tank, which is, of course, inadequate long-term, but it'll be fine for a little while I get the other tank repaired. It's just a tiny leak, as I mentioned, just in the silicone. There's nothing wrong with the glass. And so I am going to strip out the silicone ceiling and then replace it. And it won't be very expensive. It'll be a lot cheaper than getting a new tank. And then put the goldfish back in it. So fun, thrills and excitement.
That was the most
this
of
week.
Saturday.
Yeah. But we do
Friday
have some
night, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, it was just Friday night the tank was leaking, and most of Saturday was finding the new one and trying to set it up.
Yeah, all the morning until mm-hmm. about like noon or something, and we were doing that.
But at least it was a Saturday and you weren't at work, because I couldn't have lifted all that stuff myself. So.
Right. So it could have been worse. And I should have seen it coming, really, because the tank was old. We had had that tank for almost 10 years, and we got it secondhand. Today, when I was cleaning it up a little bit, I noticed that it was built in 2002.
Okay, so it's
probably
like,
has
what,
not been re-silicone since
years
then.
Old?
Yeah, so that really, I should have seen it coming. Anyway, the good news is that you may remember I put out a call for hornwort. If someone wanted to send me some hornwort, I'd send them a Culture of Live Food. And Nick in Redlands, California has come to my rescue, and he's going to send me some hornwort, and I have sent him some Daphnia, and we're good to go. So I'm looking forward to receiving that here soon, and I'm going to put some in the multi-tank because hornwort fights against cyanobacteria in several ways. It actually produces chemicals that help fight it, but it also does it in a, maybe a less direct way by using up the nutrients that the cyanobacteria would use. And so it's, there are a couple of ways it can fight against it, and that should help jumpstart things. I'm also probably going to put some in the goldfish tank because they eat the Anacharis too fast. It kind of grows, but they eat a lot of it. And maybe with some hornwort in there, it'll help. So, yeah, that is some good news.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess on to our contributors now.
Okay, let's go to Jeremiah first. Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He says, hello again. To answer the questions on my 20-gallon, no, I don't use any supplement or CO2. I'm going with a low-maintenance tank, fairly low light, and slower-growing plants. This is deliberate, as it is in a carpeted room, and the less maintenance I have to do, the less I have to worry about spilling.
Hmm.
That is true. What was that thing that we used to have that accidentally went through the dryer and so then it
I
didn't
still
work
have
anymore,
it.
But
it just doesn't work as well.
Yeah, but what's it?
I think it's called the Dry Mate.
And we got it with a Dr.
Foster's
and Smith.
Dr. Foster and Smith, yeah.
If you guys are ever interested, your roommates / spouses will be much happier about your fish tank. If you
yeah, they're really nice. It's like
a mat,
but the bottom is coated with kind of, not sticky, but like a...
Almost kind of rubbery?
Almost rubbery coating on the bottom, and then the top is soft and... anyway, it absorbs large amounts of water for its size,
mm-hmm.
very large amounts of water.
So you can put it down right in front of your fish tank when you're working
yeah.
in it.
And I have it up in the critter room right now because I've got some stuff out and it's sitting on top of it.
Just don't accidentally put it through your dryer.
Well, it's not so bad if you put it through dryer. It's actually machine washable and dryable. The problem is it can't go in
with
Velcro.
Oh, there was something with Velcro in the load, huh?
The Velcro ripped
the
it
Velcro
up. So it still works, but just not as well because mm-hmm. the bottom is what keeps the water from seeping out
mm-hmm.
and the bottom is all ripped out. So
it was totally worth it if you guys want to go check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I want to get another one sometime.
Okay, sorry. Back to Jeremiah. I'm not so much worried about the Java fern pups growing quickly as much as I am wanting to be sure they will grow okay free-floating in the aquarium as is, which it sounds like they will. I will also be adding some Java fern eventually. I will definitely be getting some kind of mesh for my python.
Oh, I think he meant to say Java moss eventually.
Oh, okay, because he already said Java fern.
Right, but yeah, yes. the plantlets, the pups, will do just fine in there, so you can leave them there.
Okay. Mesh versus python. Did he have fry? I don't remember.
He has small fish in there.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't get
sucked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right now, I am having an issue with not having enough circulation in the bottom, and I'm having some debris on the sand. I'm going to try to rig a sand vacuum of some sort, or perhaps add a power head. I also worry my filter may be undersized. I may consider adding more nerites or some otocinclus. Right now, I will focus on the sand vac.
Yeah, that can be a problem. Sand is a little harder to vacuum just because with a python, if you put it down, it's going to
suck up
a lot of the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, sand vac is probably a good idea.
He says, as far as the 40, a goldfish is a definite possibility. But the more I think about axolotls, the more fun it sounds. They're so funny looking, and I didn't know that would be enough room for multiple axolotls. That's exciting. Ta-ta for now.
And then he actually
emailed.
And we
got more from him again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very shortly thereafter.
Axolotls are cool.
They are.
That would be a fun one. And he says, hello again. After doing some thinking, the 40 is going to be for axolotls. They're so funny looking, I have to. I think I will go with a melanoid, a wild type, and either a leucistic or an albino. So get like the whole...
Cool, have a trio of axolotls.
Range there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I finished the last episode and it sounded like Joe had some questions on plants in fluorite sand. I have some suggestions that might work. I am unfamiliar with fluorite sand, but if it has a similar grain size to pool filter sand, it would probably work out as a cap to a dirted tank like Dustin on YouTube, or like the Diana Wallstad tanks. Or if the real concern is not so much the low nutrient profile of sand and more ensuring that the roots can grab on, sand over gravel might work?
In my experience, it seems that sand always works its way down under gravel, but... if they're assuming there's no other layers
in between
because
them.
The particle size
could you put
size,
like
you know.
A really fine mesh weave like
Oh, that might be a possibility.
Chiffon or something.
I know that, like, a lot of times they'll put sand over dirt as a cap, like he's mentioning there, and that works fine. But if you put gravel over...
It will just go down.
I mean, sand
over
gravel,
it
seems to work its way down eventually. At least in my experience, that's happened.
He says, another technique is the method I'm using in my neon tank. I have pieces of cork bark, silicone to porcelain tile to weigh them down. I then super glued Java fern to the wood, placed them in the tank, and added enough sand to cover the tile. If needed, rocks can be placed on the tile lip for further weight. I've been using this method for a few weeks now, and I am mostly happy with it. I have some issues with detritus, as alluded to in my prior email.
I like that method. It's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Seems like it would be a little easier to clean.
Yeah. And the cork is so buoyant normally, but if you have it glued onto the slate, that's...
But then it's not too heavy.
It's a way to solve it, yeah.
Okay, and we actually have one more from Jeremiah.
I should tell what I was going to say. Because I emailed him really quickly and said, axolotls are a great choice, but just word to the wise, you can really only keep them if you're going to have them in a cool place or you're going to have some provision for keeping the water quite cool. And that keeping them together is not problematic once they're mature, but if you keep them together when they're fairly young, they can nip at each other a lot and rip each other, actually bite chunks out of each other, rip each other's arms off and that sort of thing. So
that would be sad.
And then he responded.
Okay. So he says, Russ, thanks for the response. The cool temperatures are actually what I am leaning toward axolotls. The room I'd be using in the basement stays a chilly 65 degrees Fahrenheit. We bought the house this summer and had a bit of a heat wave, and it never got above 67 or so. I had planned on making it a snake room, but it is just too cold for most snakes I like. And I am really, really iffy about any sort of space heater. I work in insurance plus anxiety issues equals fire paranoia.
That's
understandable.
Yeah.
It might be worth seeing how things go next summer too, though, I suppose. The LED is a good thought, as it is the tendency of juveniles to cause issues. I've got a lot of reading to do. Thanks, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah, I'd also mention that we used an LED light because originally we had used a different one, and it was actually warming the water by enough.
Yeah, because it... just put out too much warmth.
Yeah, but the LED doesn't do that.
Okay, and you talked about Nick, right?
I haven't. Did I say that he's sending us the Daphnia?
He's sending us the hornwort.
Say about
the other part?
We're going to save most of the contents of the email because we're doing an interview with him.
So that will be coming up.
We don't want to steal the thunder of the interview, yeah. Because he's got some other interesting projects going on, and while we were corresponding, about some of those projects, and I asked him if he would do an interview, and so he's going to, and it'll be cool. I've actually got 3 interviews in the near future lined up, so look forward to those.
They'll be your Christmas presents.
I won't spoil what this one's going to be about. I'm just going to say it's fun, and it's been a while since we've done an interview, so doubly fun.
Yep. Okay, well, should we go to Ray, who contacted us through the Aquarimax page?
Yeah.
Okay. He says, Dear Aquarimax, I love your videos. Your advice for culturing rice flower beetles has been most helpful. I was watching one of your recent videos about mini mealworms. Are you 100% sure on the identification of the species you are culturing? I am asking because those beetles in the YouTube video you posted on October 21st titled Culturing Mini Mealworms Tenebrio Obscurus look like buffalo beetles to me. Alphitobius diaperneus rather than Tenebrio Obscurus. I have some beetles exactly like that, which I ordered from a dealer at Amazon, and he put the link to the beetles. I am submitting a few for identification to a university entomology lab tomorrow, and for what it's worth, I can let you know what the faculty and staff in the department stay.
And this was interesting because I had, when I bought the beetles, they had been sold to me as specifically as Tenebrio Obscurus. I was aware of buffalo beetles at the time, but did not, think they were those because they had been sold to me just simply as Tenebrio Obscurus, specifically not just saying mini mealworms because that could mean anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that I know that has been used to refer to at least 3 different species. So, I didn't really question it, except when I was communicating with someone on an insect forum or an invertebrate forum, arachnoboard specifically, about mini mealworms. And he said, well, here's an interesting thing about them. The the adults or the males, I can't remember which one he said, but I believe it's the males, have elongated legs as opposed to the beetles, mealworm beetles. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I realized that mine didn't have that.
They don't have the longer legs.
Right. And I thought, I must have a different species than he does. But whether he had the species that he thought he had or I did, or, you know, there was some sort of discrepancy. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what. And then when Ray emailed me, I thought, oh, okay, something's going on here. That's just, I was putting that bit of information along with this, what Ray sent me. And Ray actually sent another email after this, and he said, I submitted it, and when I gave it to the person in the entomology lab, they looked at it really quickly, and they didn't tell him exactly what species it was, but they said, that's not Tenebrio scolus.
The one that he has.
Right.
The one that he bought.
Right.
On Amazon.
Right. So, I probably
because he was thinking that he didn't have the Tenebrio, he was thinking that he had the Alphitobius.
Right, but he does know that what he has is not Tenebrio obscura, so it's okay. Very possible that what I have isn't either.
Excuse me.
So that will be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
For several reasons. One is that I'm a little worried about zoonoses that can be carried by buffalo worms.
Oh.
So
maybe we should hold up on feeding people.
For example, buffalo worms have in warm areas of the world are often a pest in poultry farms, and
we don't want to feed them to the chickens
if they're gonna cause problems there. So yeah, I need to know that,
for Pete's sake.
So I appreciate,
maybe we can find a university entomologist too.
Yeah, I appreciate Ray's information and efforts in that, and I hope to find out some more information.
Yeah, that would be helpful. Okay, we have Mick in Carnforth, UK. Hi, Mick. Look, he says hi back. He says, hi, guys. I bet he said it just like that, too. Hi, guys.
In a reasonably deeper voice, because we've heard his voice.
Well, yeah, I can't do a deeper voice. Oh, sorry. Unless I'm really sick. Okay, and he says, good news that the shell dwellers are doing well. I guess they were the last time
we
talked. I was just wondering if they were subject to bloat from eating fatty foods like the worms as other Malawi and such fish are. I remember this being... Excuse me. I remember this being a particular theme that the Bailey brothers on Pet Fish Talk used to bring up quite a bit.
Yeah, good question. I don't know. I've avoided giving them wormy foods. I have, well, besides microworms, I do give them those, but mostly for the fry. But I haven't tried anything like grindle worms or white worms or tubifex worms. Live food-wise, I've given them just the blood worms, which aren't truly worms, of course, and mosquito larvae and daphnia. So, I don't know.
And now
good
we can't
question.
Give them much of anything.
Yeah. Well, I have some that are, you know, still alive, but...
That's true.
Not
well,
as
those
many.
Are also the ones with the slightly deformed body type, so it might be harder to tell, actually.
Well, I've got one that's perfectly fine, and it's a healthy one.
Okay.
And it's not... doesn't have problems. But it's the last surviving one in that tank, and then I've got the other two in the other tank. So.
We'll see. Okay, he goes on to say, I have just managed to get a group of 5 orange dwarf Mexican crayfish, Cambarellus patsuquarensis. Probably butchered that one. I have been after small crayfish that is more suited to a community aquarium for a while. My hope is to get them breeding, so fingers crossed.
I've always liked those. They're kind of cool. They're so small.
Are they really orange?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I should show you a picture sometime. They're quite small. They are very much dwarfs.
Like, how big?
So, I don't know the exact size, but they stay very reasonable. I remember reading an article on them a couple of years back, and they stay small and they do well. Like he's saying, they do well in a community aquarium. My understanding is that you can keep them in planted aquaria, and you can keep them with most fish, and it's not really a problem.
They're pretty flexible.
Unlike some of the larger crayfish, which will eat most plants and most fish if they can get a hold of them.
So these are pretty nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will try and send in a few pictures or a video once I have them settled in the tank, just keeping them in a tank of their own with plants, woods, and cobbles. So that will be nice to see when we get that. I've also got a few incestuous groups to grow on for future breeding projects. Some gold longfin, and some longfin doliochopterus.
Cool.
With regard to the siesta period on lighting, I have used this method for several years after hearing something about it on Pet Fish Talk. My lights come on from 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then again from 3 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. All my setups run this way and I don't get big issues with algae. I have usually dosed the tanks containing live plants with liquid CO2 in the morning and have had good results in better growth, particularly on mosses, Java ferns, and Anubias. I'm going to try adding the CO2 dose in the afternoon instead and see if it changes the results.
Cool. We'll look forward to hearing what you find out there.
Good
research. I wish the one of the timers I have, the digital timer, I don't think it'll allow me to do a siesta period. But some of the other ones, just the ones you push in the pins or whatever, a lot of those it would be easy to do a siesta period with, so might want to try that for some of those.
Okay. So thank you, Mick. Should we go to Tom in Provo?
Yeah.
Okay. He says, oh, sorry if I embarrassed Kelly with my feeble joke a couple weeks ago. Sometime back, a listener with a rather cryptic YouTube name wrote in, and Kelly was joking that she hoped the name didn't mean something naughty. I probably did say something. I totally don't even remember it. And
I'll
be honest,
it now.
I don't remember what your joke was that embarrassed me right now.
You'll hear about it.
It's okay. Whatever it was, I got over it pretty fast, so no worries, Tom. He says, my first mistake was thinking that someone might still remember this bit of verbal lightheartedness from that far back. See, I don't remember what I say. My second mistake was thinking anyone would be amused by the reference, even though the phrase unsect Zifoforus Alvarezi does sound faintly salacious. I think you get points just for the phrase faintly salacious.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a good phrase. My third mistake was thinking jokes that require an explanation are ever funny. No worries. You're fine, Tom. Don't worry about it.
I actually like your explanation. I think it's funny in and of itself.
He says, I'm including three pictures of my aquarium. They include the full aquarium, a close-up, and a shot, using a flashlight to illuminate the hole in the rock in which the male Placo is previously fertilizing eggs. I hope that when I get another male Placo, I will also find this a suitable breeding spot.
And I will put pictures of that Tom has sent up on the page. They look really nice. His tank's looking really good. The plants are happy and lush, and it's definitely worth a look.
Okay. Two of the ex Alvarezi are developing swords and showing the first signs of color. Neither of these traits show well in the photos, but I enjoy including fish that have subtle coloration. And for the record, may I state that I am inordinately proud of the lush plant growth in this tank.
As well you should be.
Mm-hmm. Growing plants is as much fun as growing fish. Beatus est piscibulus.
Yeah, so check those out on our page. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned, like I said, and Kelly and I had mentioned before, for the during Christmas time, so in late December, early January, and so on, that's when kind of we're planning on releasing the interviews. So that'll be kind of fun. So during like the latter half of December and the early part of January, we will still be releasing episodes, but we won't
be interviews, though.
We
we're
won't be recording our
recording,
own during
yeah.
that period. We're going to be taking kind
we'll
of a hiatus, but you'll still get the interviews, so it'll be fun.
And if you email us, we'll still answer you if you have
right,
questions
you have
at the
question
time
or something.
Let
us know.
Or you can still send something in for when we start up again in January.
Yeah,
but we have a couple weeks until then, anyways.
Right, and we're really looking forward to the interviews. They're all from very interesting people with interesting projects. And like I said before, we haven't done interviews in a while. It's about time we get back into that.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to start doing more. So if you're interested in doing one with us, let us know. It's not that hard for us to set up. We have a service that will allow you to call in for free in most cases, and it doesn't cost us anything, and it automatically records the conversation, or you know, we push a button or something, it records the conversation, then we can download it and then just add the tags and upload it as a podcast. So it's really a pretty easy process
Ta-da!
From our part, and we love to do it. We always have fun with the interviews, and I know many listeners have mentioned in the past that they enjoy the interviews a lot too, so we're glad to be that we have three in the works. That's pretty exciting for me.
Yeah.
I hope you all enjoy them too. And in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.